I think it's time to get started, everyone. So good evening. Welcome to our Thursday, January 13th, 2022, Bellevue Transportation Commission. We're still on Zoom. Remember to keep yourself on mute to avoid any background noise, and you can participate by using the raise hand function. Let's see. And again, I will do my best to call on you. I'm actually setting up your participant list at the moment to make sure I can see your hands. So if you have any questions, please raise your hands. I will call on you. We do not have a chat function enabled, so we won't be using that for these meetings. I'll proceed with the roll call. I know Commissioner Rapoon is not here and excused. Please remember to unmute yourself when I call on your name. Vice Chair Stash. Did I hear that?
Here, sorry, maybe you didn't hear.
Commissioner Beeson.
Here.
Commissioner Kurtz.
Here.
Commissioner Helen. Commissioner Helen, not here. Not yet. Okay, we'll wait and see. We haven't heard anything, right, Kevin?
No, I haven't heard nothing from Commissioner Helen prior to the meeting.
Okay. Commissioner Ting?
Here.
Thank you. We do have a quorum, so we can proceed. Up to item number 2, approval of the agenda. Does anybody have any objections to approving the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. And we go on to item number 3, oral and written communications. So I understand we are awaiting a protocol to be developed by the city clerk's office for all boards and commissions and staff liaisons to follow on how to appropriately respond to public comment. So until we receive further guidance, we will have no commissioner discussions during this point of the agenda, and commissioners may choose to address any issues raised by the public during the study session portion of the agenda or the portions of the agenda where relevant. I don't believe anyone signed up. We do have 3 attendees. Are these attendees of the public? If you're from the public and you want to speak. I think only one. I know, Michelle, you don't wish to speak.
Right. Emil's staff, so he's just in listening mode.
Great. Okay, so we don't have anyone from the public here today. So we'll move on to item number 4, communications from City Council, Community Council, Boards, and Commissions. I don't believe Council Member Robertson is with us today, right? So do any commissioners have anything they'd like to share? Okay, well, I wanted to provide an update. I went in front of council with Mike Ingram on January 3rd, and we briefed the council on commission's recommended project list for 2022-2033 transportation facilities plan. So we did include a brief summary of the evaluation we conducted of the TFP using the MIP metrics that we discussed here in October, that preliminary analysis. So, and council members expressed particular interest in understanding where there are gaps in the bike network and the level of investment needed to advance Vision Zero. We had a good conversation about the role of TFP and the planning process, whereas the TFP is a planning tool that provides guidance and an opportunity to advance projects to a point where council can fund it in the CIP. So, I think that was a very interesting conversation as well. Council voted to endorse the commission's recommended project list as the basis for advancing to SEPA evaluation phase of the TFP process. So staff anticipates returning to us with the results of the TFP SEPA analysis in May or June, and they will be addressing council's questions and comments as well as they arose. So that was it. Does anyone else have anything else they'd like to share or comment on? So, Kevin, do you have any staff reports, or do you want to add anything to my TFP briefing?
Oh, I have nothing else to add, except I do recognize that the council was very appreciative of the Transportation Commission's work on the transportation facilities plan. The council was also appreciative of the commission's work on the multimodal concurrency policies that they adopted in December, on December 13th. Those have been incorporated into the transportation element already. And when you click on the transportation element, you will see the policy work that you did. This is like the first meeting in ages that the mobility implementation plan has not been on the agenda. It will be on soon. I have faith that at the February 10th commission meeting, you will see a draft of the mobility implementation plan for your review. I expect a couple touches with the commission prior to a transmittal to the city council for their consideration and approval, hopefully in April, the April-May timeline. And that's my report.
Well, thank you, Kevin. We don't have a public hearing today, so we move on to item 7 of the agenda of the study session. And we have interesting new topic today, curb management plan. This is going to be an introduction, I understand, to the city's curb management plan process. And then this is the first time that this topic comes before the commission. And so I believe I'm calling Chris who's going to present. Chris, the floor is yours. I do want to add in this topic, I'll just allow Chris, please feel free to let us know when it's appropriate time to ask clarifying questions, or if you'd like to have a discussion, I'm happy to facilitate that as well.
Great, that sounds wonderful. Thank you, Chair Monsignante, Vice Chair Stash, and members of the commission. My name is Chris Iverson. I'm a senior engineer in the transportation department. And tonight I'm here to introduce an upcoming project that you will likely be seeing more of throughout 2022 called the Curb Management Plan. And this is a new long-range planning effort that the city will be embarking on and has actually already been working on behind the scenes for the last couple months. As a starting point, I would like to go ahead and introduce the outline for our presentation. We're anticipating our presentation to be around 30 minutes, and we would respectfully ask that you would hold all questions and just jot notes, and we can have a long discussion at the end. I think we're anticipating about 30-minute discussion, upwards of 30 minutes. The outline for the presentation, we'll do a quick overview of the project scope and introduce the project team. I'd like to bring the material and how it applies in the Bellevue context. And then we will jump a little bit more broadly into what's called curb management principles. So that is where we start off. I will be the acting project manager from the city. I am coordinating with a handful of other staff members in various departments on this project. And with me tonight is two of our consultants. They're effectively the co-project managers that are assisting us tonight and will be assisting us throughout the project. Lauren McTurn and Evan Costaviola from Nelson Nygaard are here tonight, and they'll be walking through the project. Next slide, please. So as a just as a quick overview, I'd really like to highlight what curb management is, just as a project concept, or as a transportation and mobility concept. It is kind of it's sort of a unique and very nuanced topic. I like to say that it is one of the most important mobility assets that you've never heard of, because it is a concept that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. This quote that's listed here is from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. The concept of curb management and seeks to inventory, optimize, allocate, manage curb space to maximize mobility, safety, and access for the wide variety of curb demands. So when we're talking about the curb, what we really mean is the space that abuts that 6-inch raised that concrete in urban areas for the most part. So that really traditionally has delineated the travel space, you know, the vehicle lanes or bike lanes with the sidewalk and the planting space. That area functions as kind of a permeable intermediary, so to speak, between those two zones, and really can function, really it has a really versatile function, and it's multifaceted. So, you know, these are just a handful of pictures. Most of these are actually from Bellevue. We have pictures of dining, of on-street parking, shuttle and transit loading, freight delivery operation, ride hailing. These are all uses of the curb. And as the city grows, it's going to be increasingly important to put together a more comprehensive framework and understanding of how we manage these curbs moving forward. Next slide, please. So this is just a quick rundown of the purpose and objectives, effectively the scope of the project. Ultimately, the curb management plan will be establishing a new policies and guidance for how these curb areas should be designed, maintained, and operated over time. So what we mean by that is we need to think holistically about how we deal with these types of environments into the future. And within that scope of work, we're going to be tackling a lot of different things, many more things than we've historically done when we think about this space. So, you know, establishing a vision and values framework, really kind of rooting it back to core principles and policy guidance that the city has for how we want to interact with the curb. Eventually, we'll get into what we're calling a prioritization framework for curb use. So depending on land use context and street design, we'll want to inform different curb uses in different locations. We'll think about options to establish a pricing-based curb program for the myriad of different curb uses. So what that means is, you know, right now, if you look at how we manage curbs from the city right now, we do have some pricing-based solutions, like, for example, employer shuttles, Amazon, and the Microsoft Connector shuttles. They actually have to pay a fee to use to have access to public curbside. And we want to expand that and look at just how we can sort of wrap this all into a more deliberate program. And then the last two bullets are more of an internal-facing approach, trying to come up with a playbook of sorts that both internal and external stakeholders can use as a reference when we're talking about making changes to the curb environment, and then also making sure that our organizational and staffing framework is up to speed to actually implement the eventual recommendations that come out of this plan. So pretty comprehensive. It is a pretty exciting project, and it really pairs in well with how we're seeing Bellevue grow. So you can go to the next slide. It really brings me to why are we tackling this now? You know, I think everybody interacts with the curb today, and relatively kind of, you know, from the face value, it seems like it works. But really what we've noticed over time is as the city grows, we've seen more and more of these sticking points at the curbside that affect safety, they affect mobility, the efficiency of the transportation system, and better practices would be able to enhance the livability of the area or of Bellevue in general. So rapid growth really affects how curbs are designed and used. And then more broadly, kind of from a national scale, the increase of new mobility services like Uber and Lyft, e-commerce, some of these more nuanced and really up and coming mobility service operations are all kind of culminating at the curbside. So a lot of communities are grappling with this about how we can best manage all these different competing uses. The final bullet I have here talks to responding some of the curb solutions that the city enacted during the, especially the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, namely creating food priority pickup zones and actually creating an on-street dining area in Old Bellevue. You may have been familiar with that. They've really inspired both staff and have kind of inspired the public to ask more from the city about how we can activate these curbside zones for broader use. So that's the big reason why we're trying to tackle this now, but the timing is right. And then actually one thing I didn't add in here was upcoming investments and upcoming EastLink project is really going to cause a new way of getting around Bellevue. So I'd like to propose a metaphor for curb management. You know, again, I like to say that this is a really nuanced topic. The general public generally doesn't understand what you mean by curb management. So what I like to say is, you know, think of the curb as kind of the shoreline of the street. And when you think about, you know, waterfronts, you have all of these different really specific cases. You know, you have quote unquote parking for boats, you know, marinas. You have commercial freight, you have docks. You have ferry terminals that are for passenger load and unload. You know, some places you have placemaking activation, you have greenery, you have seating and dining areas all by the waterfront. If all of these, you know, coalesced in the same area and there was a jockeying for space, it would, you know, these areas would just be not, they would not be as effective. So being more deliberate about how we think about curb management can sort of be applied in this situation. So I'm going to go through just quickly some Bellevue specific context and talk about some of the work that has already been done at the curbside over the last several decades. So back in 1996, Bellevue actually formalized the on-street parking program in downtown. There were some ordinances that were passed to establish that. Right now, if you go downtown, any on-street parking areas are time limited and are being enforced from, we're using a contracted service to enforce that. Within the last 10 years, there have been some efforts to look at curb management, not just from parking, but from other modal operation as well. So downtown transportation plan was certainly a big component. About 8 years ago, the Transportation Commission actually worked on a recommendations for parking on the street for that body of work. And then more broadly in 2015, King County actually began regulating what are called TNCs, transportation network companies, just an acronym for ride hailing services. So that was kind of the first look at, from a regional perspective, of saying, hey, we need to think about regulatory frameworks for these types of rising use cases. Over the last couple of years, the city has been really active at launching pilot projects specific to the curbside. So the city actually received a grant from the Department of Energy and partnered with the University of Washington's Urban Freight Lab to assess curb technologies that would, the intent was to try to reduce emissions from a first last mile perspective from freight. So that was also paired with a project that the city was awarded from the Transportation for America. The Smart Cities Collaborative was a project that we also piloted different technologies for. Bellevue was one of three cities to be selected as a pilot city for these types of curb pilots. And then again in 2020, we deployed more COVID-based responses. The Alfresco Dining Program and the Food Priority Pickup Zones were all in response to the pandemic. So all these different curb actions have been building over time. Curb management generally has also been identified in a handful of city planning documents. So again, downtown transportation plan, recently the smart mobility plan, which this body, the Transportation Commission, did review a handful of years ago. They had some strategies to implement some curb technology for enhancing mobility and electrification of the street or of the transportation system. And then the Environmental Stewardship Plan also has a strategy to enact more broad curb management policies. the reality of how the city approaches curb management today is a little bit is a little bit behind the times, recognizing the changing landscape of our street grid. So right now, anytime that there's an action that needs to happen at the curb, these are generally done in a piecemeal and ad hoc basis. So we don't have a really strong policy or guiding framework to make curb-based decisions. It's generally more of a response to something that is happening or a request from the community. Our parking enforcement does exist, but it is very light. And that has kind of posed problems over time where people are violating time limits or parked in incorrect locations or causing other impacts to the right of way. So again, some of these curb management frameworks are, they have not yet been established in a more comprehensive way. Go on to the next slide, please. And, you know, again, this is supposed to be a forward-thinking document. So we have EastLink coming, and that's going to add burdens in specific locations, especially in downtown in Wilburton and the Belle Red, where we will actually be seeing more demands at the curbside by stations. That really adds an effect to how transportation is assessed. The growth of the city is going to be causing a lot of different changes to how we interact with the curb space that we have. Especially in areas that currently don't have robust street grids, you think Belle Red area and Wilburton, the city has these long range plans to build extensive street grids as development occurs. And right now we don't have a framework to really make an educated decision about how we should be operating and designing those spaces. So this is going to help inform the future of the growth of Bellevue. One last note before I pass it off to our consulting team. The curb management plan will be establishing recommendations that are going to be focused in the growth corridor. So you are all familiar with the concept of the PMAs from the Mobility Implementation Plan. We're really going to be focused in that type one area, which is the orange zone. So downtown, Belle Red, Wilburton, and East Main are going to be our focus areas. We will eventually be discussing more curb policies at future meetings, and those will technically be citywide policies, but the actual recommendations for curb management are going to be deliberate in this area. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to Evan and Lauren, and we'll begin diving into principles and best practices.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Hi, everyone. My name is Evan Costoliola. I'm a principal at Nelson Nygaard, and I'm going to be serving as the project director for the curb management plan. We are thrilled to begin this project and start to collaborate with the commission. And to get us started, I'm going to quickly run through some of the current curb conditions that we're seeing in Bellevue and some of the things that we've heard from city staff. And then Lauren's going to start to dive into some of the curb principles and best practices that we're seeing regionally and across the nation. Next slide. So curb users, that includes, you know, people that need access to curb, operators, businesses, they tend to experience some more obvious functional breakdowns of the curb today. You probably experience them yourself, but we're going to dig into that in just a minute. I really want to start by talking about what we've identified with city staff during our kickoff workshop. That includes many of the challenges and opportunities related to operating the curb and achieving the intended outcomes along the curb. These include challenges related to communicating how and why changes to the curb are made, establishing priorities that address the highest and best use of the curb now and also into the future. We realized that the degree to which the land use code actually impacts the ability to change curb design. Many folks had discussed the need to ensure flexibility in policy design and the development of priorities so that we can future-proof against future changes to the curb in terms of demand and technology. We talked about some of the internal capacity issues that are present in the city that need to be addressed. And then we also talked about the need to daylight current and future ADA accessibility challenges at the curb. Next slide. So what do curb users experience today? Bellevue tends to experience the challenge that we see in a lot of other cities of high demand curbs often being full, but all other curbs being underutilized. Curb users also tend to have a tough time understanding curb regulations on any given block, but also not all curb uses are enforced, which is kind of something that we're seeing other cities address. And as growth continues in the growth corridor, curb demands are going to continue to increase. Some curbs are going to continue to be uncomfortable for people walking, biking, and even relaxing. And current conflicts across the curb users are unresolved. Next slide. So a comprehensive curb management strategy, which is what we intend on building throughout this process, you know, we want to see this result in or without the curb strategy that we are going to be building over the next few months, we're going to see a continuance of negative outcomes, and that is from an access, safety, and right-of-way organization standpoint. Things like Uber and Lyft are going to continue to congest the public right-of-way and by double parking. Metro and Sound Transit buses are going to continue to experience delays. More and more, we're going to be seeing delivery vehicles unable to find safe and efficient loading opportunities. And most curbs are dedicated to actually moving cars instead of other uses. Next slide. So what we hope to see in the future is that, you know, even as the growth corridor continues to become more dense and curb demands increase, we hope that curbs are going to be well utilized, easy to use and understand, and able to accommodate the vast range of curb uses that we are seeing proliferate today and in the future. We also hope to see new developments supporting curb access and loading features. We want to see safe and comfortable bike and walking facilities and experience to be improved. And loading conflicts where you see in places in places like downtown and the Spring District, those will be resolved. Next slide. So the comprehensive curb strategy that results from the curb management plan is going to ensure that there is more space for al fresco curbside dining, space dedicated for transit and bikes, space allocated to meet delivery, shuttle, and ride-hail demand, and even space for micromobility parking. In a nutshell, the priority curb activities will have a place and they will be easy to use. So that's kind of the end state that we're hoping to get to.
Thanks. And I'm Lauren Matern, and I'm the project manager on the Nelson Nygaard side working with Evan and Chris. So continuing from where Evan left off, I wanted to just provide a little bit of grounding in the type of thinking we want to bring to the curb management plan. Curb management is complicated because of the many, many things it's trying to accomplish. It's including parking management, but so much further beyond that as well. It's a really multimodal topic. So a few of the perspectives we want to keep in mind as we start to kind of shape the foundation of the curb management plan. One is that curb management really shouldn't be considered block by block. It should definitely reflect its surroundings, but that context really matters. But there's also a time and place to ensure that a sort of systems thinking overrides curb priority. And that's particularly important for networked services like transit and bike facilities, things where if the network falls apart, the overall system is impacted. So even if those kind of network views don't show up and advocate for their use on every block, we want to make sure that they're still really well thought through in any curb management strategy. Another perspective to keep in mind is just how much curb there is and how just omnipresent it is, as Chris described earlier, that it, you know, it's on every block, it's always changing, and it's a massive resource that serves as a gateway between our building frontages and our transportation right of way. So it's a really complicated and massive resource to get right. And last, I think this has come through so far, but there's just the growing number of demands on the curb. It's an exciting change of events, and we expect it to only get more complicated. So just anticipating the broad swath of pressures means that allocating and managing that space has gotten more complicated, and there's a greater need to bring some consistency and coherence across different curb pilots and programs. Last but not least, it's just really critical to the curb management plan that we connect how we view the curb to other city goals, and that includes mobility goals, but also extending beyond. Given how omnipresent and major the curb is as an asset, making sure that we're really grounded in a well thought out vision and value statement before we get too far down the road is going to be very important to us and to the curb management plan. So continuing on that thread, we, shoring up the vision and values is going to be one of the most important first steps. But tonight, to provide a little bit of initial thinking on principles, I'd like to go through a few lenses that we're intending to keep in mind. Curb equity is one of those, and we need to go through the process of defining what that looks like. But some initial thinking would be to ask questions around who are the curb users that are most likely to be left out of consideration? What uses are currently prioritized at the curb? Who uses those services? Are those with the biggest mobility needs prioritized at the curb appropriately today? If not, what would need to change? So we're going to be looking at allocation and management both to consider if we are using curbs equitably. Efficiency and effectiveness is a major theme, and that goes beyond just, you know, pricing conversations. Just, you know, knowing how many competing pressures there are, how easy it is for curb programs to be ad hoc these days given those pressures, and how much resource goes into managing the curb and making it all work. We want to make sure all of that is aligned and effective and has consistent goals across different modes. Another often overlooked curb management principle is just user friendliness. I think with more and more pressures on the curb, like the rules, inherent rules around how to operate at the curb and how long you can stay, what you can do there is changing. And, you know, even from before when it was a little more stable, you know, curb management, parking management hasn't always gotten the like highest marks for user friendliness. So bringing that lens to thinking about how we organize future curbs, how we manage them, and how we make it clear what you can do and where is going to be an understated goal in the process. Decision-making clarity is going to be really, really important. There are just so many groups that make decisions that impact the curb, so many folks affected. And so establishing a consistency and clarity around how to make decisions and why we make decisions across multiple departments and operators is going to be important. And then lastly, adaptability and resilience. And that's really getting at how do we scale curb allocation and management recommendations geographically and also across time. So knowing that earlier in the presentation, we covered how quickly we're expecting Bellevue to change, what types of pressures we're anticipating. And so we know that the way we set up curb allocation and prioritization needs to be able to evolve over time so that the guidance isn't stale in 5 or 10 years. So those are some of the principles that we're starting with and looking forward to fleshing out the vision and values more thoroughly to build as a foundation for the rest of the curb management plan. And given that there are so many curb users, so many operators and interests, we know that with this increasing range of pressures, including those we don't know about, that making sure that the roles and responsibilities of all parties is going to be an important aspect. So you will see that coming through in the overall work plan that Chris showed earlier, that we want to make sure that after we think through what should be, that how it can be is given a strong consideration as well. So Chris gave a preview earlier of the overall work plan, and that's repeated here. I thought I would just give you a couple of quick examples of some of the core of the Career Management Plan work plan. These are a couple of the items that we get the most questions about, how to do this, what would this look like. So I thought I'd show you a couple examples from other cities tackling career management plans and how they're thinking about it, just to make the core of these two deliverables a little bit more tangible as we move forward. So we've talked a little bit about CURB allocation earlier and the increasing pressures that are mounting on the CURB. And as we investigate that further in our existing conditions work, we're going to be asking some interesting questions around how is CURB space allocated today and if that matches our stated goals, stated mobility goals and stated city goals. So that's going to be a really interesting kind of first point of analysis, and it dovetails very directly to some of the CURB equity conversations we want to have as well. And once we get into a thorough understanding of how CURB space is allocated today, how it's performing, how that matches our overall goals, we'll want that. That'll be feeding into one of the core work products I mentioned, and that's a prioritization framework. So this is just an example. So you know the product we come up with is going to look different. I think we're going to move away from this nomenclature as well. But this is just to give you an example of how you would even start to think about a prioritization approach and scaling CURB management recommendations across broad geographies and future-proof it as well over time. So this is an example from some recent work in Atlanta, where we developed a prioritization framework, and we did work from an analytical base looking at context and transportation systems, developed a CURB topology map, and then some guidance that was flexible around what to prioritize it in what areas, and a menu of what options to apply. And so the CURB topology map could be updated over time, and the way that we detailed out the CURB management options, we tried to give really clear direction, but we also sort of bucketed things so that if in 5 years there's a new and better way to establish people or green space, that the work didn't become irrelevant, but that it's establishing a way of thinking about the CURB. And then another key piece of the body of work following prioritization is also around CURB program and management options for the full swath of curbside uses, and that would include pricing. So again, this is just a snapshot of an example from a very different context, but I thought I'd show it just to sort of bring some tangibility again to what this might look like. So in this case, this comparable CURB plan made the move to adopt performance-based pricing standards across all modes, and that include demand-based pricing for on-street parking, and also adopting the goal of establishing demand-based pricing for on-street commercial loading and other curb uses as well. So that's how that particular example thought about its performance-based program. It's spanning multiple modes and uses of the curb. So these are just two examples of only two components of the CURB management plan, but they're ones we wanted to show you because we know that they are the ones that are the just kind of newer trends in CURB management, an establishing practice, and ones that are going to be really, really important for us as a group to get right for the CURB management plan. So with that, I think we'll move to talking through the schedule so you can get a sense of the broader workflow over the coming year.
Thanks, Lauren. So as you can imagine, we have a lot to get through over the next 11 months. We started back in November and hit the ground running. We are now in the process of collecting data and beginning work on a state of the curb existing conditions document that's going to run through the next, you know, three to four months, or 2 to 3 months. We're going to be then moving into a stakeholder and public engagement process that starts this month. The engagement work is going to continue throughout the project, and I'm going to go into the details of that engagement plan on the next slide. The meat of the curb management plan is the development of the curb policy and pricing concepts, and that's going to run from February all the way through July. From March to August, we are going to be developing the curb prioritization framework that Lauren discussed a couple slides ago, and begin nesting curb priorities and policies into a curb typology. And so, you know, ultimately this, the aim is to adopt the curb management plan, but the tool that will be used is really the curb typology. This will be rich information related to each curb type on each block. We will then culminate our work with the development of a curbside playbook that Chris described earlier in our presentation, as well as a final curb management plan document with a clear roadmap for testing and piloting new solutions and new ideas related to curb management. The curb management plan is going to ultimately be adopted by council, integrated into the comp plan amendment process. That's going to require a lot of engagement with y'all on the Transportation Commission, the Planning Commission, as well as council, and that's going to be happening throughout the course of the project. Next slide. I'm going to go through our approach to engagement. This is work that's going to be starting, you know, within the coming week or so. We are organizing our engagement approach into three work streams. That is to inform the public, to consult with stakeholders in the public, and then to engage in some robust collaboration. The inform piece is really making sure that the public is aware of project materials, updates on the project, you know, project direction and policy direction. That's all going to be listed on the Engagement Bellevue website. Our consultation process is going to kick off with a curb survey that's going to be delivered to the public and analyzed. Some of those findings are going to be pulled back into the state of the curb documentation, as well as lead to some of our early thinking on priorities. We're also going to be convening local and regional stakeholders in a curb summit. We're also going to bring in some national experts related to curb management. That's going to allow us to have a frank conversation about what some of the challenges are related to curb management in Bellevue, as well as, you know, what's worked really well in other cities and comparable cities that might be, you know, seeded and investigated for application in Bellevue. We'll be conducting a slew of stakeholder interviews and focus groups, and ultimately we're going to be working with you and Planning Commission, Council to collaborate on policy concepts, the development of the curb typology, to ultimately be adopted by Council. So again, a lot to do, and we've got a lot of next steps, but that gives you a general summary of what we're up to.
Great, and just to wrap things up, some next steps on the horizon to be aware of. At the upcoming February 14th council meeting, we will be going to request and initiate a comp plan amendment work plan for 2022, as Evan was alluding to have the Transportation Commission collaborate and work with staff on creating updated policy language, fairly similar to how you all did that effort with the mobility implementation plan, eventually culminating in a transmittal recommendation to Planning Commission. And we'll also be asking to have the Transportation Commission guide in the direct development of the outputs from the plan itself. So that'll be on February 14. And then the next commission meeting that we'll be talking with you all will be on March 10th. That meeting, we, you know, pending council direction, we will be starting policy discussion in support of the curb management plan. So stay tuned, certainly much more to come. And with that, I will take a step back and thank you, Lauren and Evan, for presenting and opening it up for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Chris, Lauren, Evan. Thank you so much for the presentation. So let's start with clarifying questions that you might have, and then we can do one round of 3 minute comments for the team to take back if you have any feedback. If you all agree, we can proceed that way. So we can do the questions just by raising your hand if you just have a clarifying question. Commissioner Ting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Can you tell me how do the bike lanes and the bike routes interact or interplay with curb management?
So I believe broadly, bike lanes that are against the curb could be considered a curb use. Ultimately, there can be overlapping curb uses. So in Bellevue, we have few examples of this, but there's some design element that actually allow bike lanes next to on-street parking, if you can kind of imagine that. So bike lanes, travel lanes, bus lanes, those would all be considered a mobility use of the curb.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So let me, just to get a clarification here. So when I'm thinking about the bike lanes that we're constructing, the different types, do those fall within the curb management program, or are they a separate, like, are they outside of the scope of curb management, or does it depend on the type of bike facility?
So in general, I believe that it would depend on the type of bike facility. I think that there's a use case for bike lanes against the curb that you would want to see, you know, more protection, and certainly that would result in a very specific type of curb use. But I think that for again, it's kind of important to think about how curb space is used from more of a dynamic perspective. So a bike lane would be, ideally, it would be a 24/7 facility for bike movement. It would be a facility that's unimpeded by any other type of use. And some of these strategies that we're thinking about from curb management are trying to grant some areas to facilitate those types of dynamic use, whether it's load-unload, parking, bus stops, et cetera, where kind of the events come and go, so that you can actually make sure that the bike lane remains open. And Evan and Lauren, if you have other feedback, I'd love for you to chime in as well.
Yeah, you know, one way that we've addressed this in other cities that we've worked in is we just build existing modal plans or like the MIP, for example, we would build that into the curb typology. We're not going to dictate any design features. We're not going to dictate whether or not something's going to be a bike lane versus a protected bike lane. We might note, though, that, you know, it's been indicated that this along this block, there's going to be a bike feature, a bike facility. And so a mobility function is one of the higher priorities along this curb. So that gives staff and policymakers a little bit more guidance as to what generally should be prioritized in that specific block.
Thank you. Commissioner Sash and Vice Chair Sash.
Thanks for the presentation, guys. Just a question on, for a city like Bellevue, is there any recommended percentage of coverage for bikes as compared to delivery? You know, any kind of industry rule of thumb that you'll be shooting for?
Thank you, Vice Chair Sash, for the question. I'm at this point not aware of an industry standard. Bellevue has a very interesting street environment, as I'm sure you're aware. In downtown, we have a super block grid with 600-foot blocks versus other cities that, like Seattle, for example, has 300-foot blocks, that really limits our ability to do a lot more with the curb, just because we have to have a lot of that right-of-way space for movement. So I think that as we get into evaluating existing data and assessing existing conditions, we'll be taking a look at some of the high demand locations, and based off of that data and based off of public feedback, we'll hopefully come up with better recommendations for better splits about how specific use cases can be applied. Evan and Lauren, are you aware of other industry standards or anything that might address that question?
No, there are a few standards that address really specific relationships, like around accessible parking, for example, compared to other types of parking. But within the broader spectrum of curb management, there's nothing like that. And I would say it's hyper-contextual because you'd want to really be anchoring that in your broader mobility goals. And then, of course, some of the context that Chris mentioned around how is the curb being used for movement versus storage, et cetera. And that's kind of your starting pool. And then I do think, some sort of cross-referencing of how it's used to investigate if it's matching overall mobility goals is a really valuable exercise.
Okay, thank you.
Following up on that, I was curious, does the scope of the project include the entire city of Bellevue? Are you looking at residential curb management, if you may, or are you going to be focusing mostly in our growth area? There, okay, you did, you mentioned that. Thank you for that.
So I think it's worth reiterating, though, that, you know, again, pending council direction to go through the, enact the CPA, the policies that we will be developing are going to be technically citywide policies. But yes, most of the recommendations, the typologies, the prioritizations are going to be applied in the orange area, so to speak.
Thank you. Commissioner Singh?
Thank you. In looking at your priorities, can you tell me how do environmental and safety concerns show up in the priorities? Because I remember looking at that slide and I didn't see those specifically called out. So are those under a subcategory or how does that work?
So are you wondering how we apply environmental and safety considerations to curb management?
In terms of priorities, yes.
I think that will show itself out as we start talking about, initially start talking about policy and how it relates to other existing policy. We'll have to look back at data that we have, you know, crash history, other uses that might negatively impact the environment, and then figure out where we can get the most bang for our buck. So
okay. I mean, I was specifically looking at this slide and just wondering how those two items sort of fit in into the principles. Is it under, or is it just a separate
yeah.
consideration?
I think, and you could call those part of curb equity in a broader definition. But this list of principles was sort of meant to identify some that are commonly overlooked in other curb management plans. So building out the sort of final set of vision and values for this curb management plan, that's an important comment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? I don't see any other hands up at the moment. Commissioner Beeson?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to the map and get clarification. You say in the orange area, that's where you're going to focus, but yet you're going to take those principles and apply them across the city. So I guess I'm just a little bit curious if there's a general matrix in which you intend to use that can just transition from area to area, or how you're going to gather the data for that.
So that's thank you, Commissioner Beeson. I think that I should clarify when I say that the policies will be citywide. What I mean is that we won't be, when you go through, it's more of a technical approach. When you go through a comp plan amendment process and you make policy amendments, you either do them within elements of the comp plan itself You know, there's like the transportation element, there's the land use element, et cetera. And then there's also sub areas, like downtown, there's downtown sub area plan, there's a Bel-Red sub area plan. So the policies are going to have language that are talking specifically about these areas in the orange, but they will be resting in the elements rather than the sub areas. And what that does, that effectively allows us to make amendments to policy, so we don't have to make amendments in several different sub areas. It's a more streamlined approach. And again, I should also continue to caveat by saying this is all pending council direction, since we have not yet received council direction to launch the policy work plan.
Are there any more questions? So considering we are definitely pending council direction, that was the background, and their conversation might result in some modifications that I'll be eager to hear. But as a preliminary topic, I would like to spend, 3 minutes each, commissioner, to give your initial perspectives of where your concerns are and your questions, not something that the team has to answer today, but more for them to take and think about as they walk this process or take this process along the way, things that you might be interested in the future of understanding or seeing, anything that you think is important, just in general. So I'll go in order that I see in my screen for whatever reason that you're organized in that way. First one I have here is Vice Chair Stash.
Yeah, thank you. A couple thoughts. I think in general, you guys seem to be thinking of, at least what I can think of, it's important. I'm sure you're thinking, but as the city grows, I think more and more delivery vans and those types of usages are gonna expand. And I, personally, kind of a personal preference, I think the dining, the usage of the curbs for that, especially in the summer months, was a really great addition to the city. So I'd love to see that built in and thought about in the plan as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Commissioner Ting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. So some thoughts come to my mind. I would suggest looking at the prioritization and trying to get clear prioritization from council on the different customers and uses, so that we get sort of an early understanding of where that's headed. I think one consideration to keep in mind is the likelihood of increased density due to external pressures. That will cause potentially more pressure or more requirements for on-street parking, whether we like it or not, and how that sort of impacts the plans for curb usage. So, as density increases and the requirements for off-street parking may not come along with that, I'm not sure exactly how we manage the curb, given that we will see an increase on on-street parking. I'd also ask if you can look at any end user facing features. So is there anything from the smart mobility perspective that we can showcase to the residents, workers, and visitors of Bellevue from the curbside program so that they can see, not only like very clear parking instructions, but also if there's something more technology related that improves the user experience, maybe think along those lines. And then I guess finally, if there's anything you can do for a really robust community engagement, getting ideas early. I like the fact that you've got Engaging Bellevue in there. And I think, just getting that as soon as possible and brainstorming, people love to be engaged. And if they're not, then people get pretty upset. So I would really encourage that early in the process. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner Ting. Commissioner Beeson?
Thank you for the presentation. It was great. I'm glad it's being considered. As someone that lives and works downtown, I can certainly relate to the delivery trucks and the Uber and Lyft traffic. It's definitely increased over the past 24 months, especially with everybody ordering and getting home deliveries and the increased apartment living. One thing I think is very important, and which I think Vice Chair Stash mentions, I'd really like to see some kind of support for the business community. I think this summer, while things were difficult, having the businesses out on the sidewalks, it just had a sense of community. It might be something to involve the Bellevue Downtown Association, chambers, et cetera. I think that there could be a component of that would be really good for the community. I think I'd like to see that considered as well. And I still guess I'm just a little confused about how we're going to gather the data to prioritize the projects, kind of like Commissioner Ting said. So that's something I'd like to see a little bit more detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Beeson. Commissioner Kurtz?
Thanks for the presentation. I think it's a great topic, very interesting. Kind of like Commissioner Beeson was saying, I'm interested in the in any data you collect that kind of helps quantify, you know, what the biggest problems are. I don't go downtown that much, actually. I don't use the curbs downtown very much, but I'd be very curious to see if our biggest problem, for example, is congestion caused by like TMT pickups and deliveries. And, you know, if that's a bigger, my suspicion is that's a bigger problem than parking right now. But I'd be curious to see what kind of data you collect on that. And then also, you know, whether things change, I won't say post COVID anymore, but maybe as people return to work in all those buildings downtown, you know, if that won't change things as well. And then the other thing I'm kind of interested in is, I know there's companies out there that are already helping cities monetize the curb by charging for, you know, very short time windows, like so that delivery companies can make pickups and get a scheduled window. I'm not aware that exists yet for the rideshare companies, so I'm curious if that, you know, if that technology is actually available today. And then also, like, I wonder how I think the key issue is, like, how would you balance something like that where the monetization is very clear against some of these other uses, like we just described, how helping business owners use curb space for dining, you know, that's a lot harder to measure the value of, because it's not being paid for by a single person. Anyway, those are the things on my mind. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Kurtz. And I have a probably very simple observation based on this element and this map that we're looking here. You know, the most interesting and most important, probably, and we haven't defined it, but places where you need to create these structures are where the curb has most intense use. And so that's why you're focusing on this. But I, knowing the city and understanding the importance that residents place on their quality of living and their suburban living, and understanding that the curb is changing for residential areas as well, right, as we have a lot more home delivery and people dropping off and picking up packages. Maybe we're seeing more bike lanes near our curbs as traffic increases and folks having a harder time to get in and out of their driveways and finding street parking instead. Those are simpler elements that we're not usually thinking of when you think a curb management plan and some elements, but I'd encourage the team to be prepared for a broad sort of curb conversation of all areas in Bellevue, just to satisfy the concerns that residents might have of their changing sort of curb experience in all places in Bellevue. So I understand where the need is greatest. And so there might be some metrics or data that you can use to explain the intensity of the curb and why it's more important in some areas versus others, that can help provide context to the city residents overall about what type of use cases you're really looking at and trying to solve, rather than just, you know, stopping when we get annoyed because our neighbor parked in front of our house or something like that. And so that's what I've been thinking about in very simple terms. But I really appreciate the presentation. It seems fantastic, a fantastic topic, very timely. I like that you're trying to approach it in the same way that we did the mobility implementation plan. We understand that process here at this commission, and so I appreciate repetition and lessons learned might help us get through it as well. So that's all I have. Thank you so much, Chris, Evan, and Lauren for being with us today.
Thanks again for the time.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. We are moving on to our second study session item, which is, let me say that right, I-405 South Downtown Access. So we are receiving this solely for our information. Staff is providing an overview of the I-405 South Downtown Access study planning process and the preferred alternative that Council has already identified on April 5th, 2021. Since Council has already taken action on this item, I believe there is no discussion needed. We just need to understand the background and the context of the TIP, as I understand. But I will leave it to staff to let us know when it is appropriate for commissioners to either ask clarifying questions or to solicit input from commissioners if you want to hear our feedback. And I believe Suman Yen is going to be presenting. I will hand it over.
Suming, are you there?
Since I'm a co-host.
Yeah. He shows up as attending, but.
Yeah, I've asked to unmute. I have a.
Yeah, me too.
We can all do it. All the commissioners can ask.
Okay. Well, let me give him a message.
All right. Well,
there he is.
I'm here, so I just couldn't the screen that the buttons all disappeared. So sorry about that. And so let me share my screen. Make sure that the right one show up. So am I displaying things correctly?
Yes, looks good.
All right, great. Thanks, Madam Chair. And my name is Suming Yan. I manage the South Downtown Access Study. So it, as the Chair has mentioned, that the Council has weighed the facts and the study findings and made a decision. So what I'm here today is to report what the study finds and what the inputs that we've received from the stakeholders and the general public. And then, you know, the detailed data that backed up the Council direction. So the last time I was, I think around September of 2020, that was about halfway through the study. I went here to give you a status report of what the scenarios were looked at. At that time, we looked at the about a dozen scenarios, and about, you know, 6-7 of those that didn't pass the initial screening. So and then since then we focused on the 5 alternatives that show having promises. So then through the tier 2 study with the public involvement, that the highlight is that the Medicare connector software on-ramp is identified as the best option that will serve the city's needs. So just quickly overview of what the 5 scenarios are, starting from the south end of the study area to north, the Medicare connector. You all know there's a existing northbound off-ramp to the Medicare connector that goes to a Home Depot direction. And this alternative is to build a companion ramp that going southbound, fly over the freeway. So the next option is at the Southeast 6th Street, just a little bit north of Southeast 8th. It will make a connection to the Lake Hills and that the upper hill on the east side of the freeway. And then have a southbound on-ramp from the west side of the freeway only. So a third option is a variation of it, and the same to have extension of the Southeast 6th Street to Lake Hills connector. And this one, instead of connecting from the outside, this would do a inside connection, basically connect to the express toll lane that's currently under construction. This will work like the Northeast 6th Street, that the inside HOV lane. So again, this is where I have an overpass at the connecting the Webberton side to the East Main side. And the fourth option is at the Northeast 2nd Street. So we have studied several variations to have connections, on-ramp connections at this point, but they all deemed to be either too costly or too impactful. So the remaining option was to study the only local connection that goes over 405 without ramps to 405. It will connect the 112s to 116s. And then the last one, and obviously, is the no build that serve as a baseline to compare all these options. So in the tier 2 analysis, we applied a mix of qualitative and quantitative measurements to evaluate these options. So basically, on the quantitative side, we looked at how these options align with the current plans and policies. On the quantitative side, and look at the travel time savings, and look at the impact to property. You know, that can be quantified in terms of acreage, and also how much it costs, and how much it improves multimodal access and safety. And along this process, we had a fairly robust stakeholder input engagement. We had two online open houses, so I will summarize those, what we heard from those stakeholders and the general public later on in the process. So first of all, how these alternatives align with the plans, and basically And of all the 5 options, and this, the connection at the Southeast 6th Street stand up to have significant issues. Basically, a connection is not envisioned in any of the current plan. There's a concern if this alternative is moving forward, there will be a significant work to revise the existing policies, and that could in turn affect the progress of the East Main TOD work. So So that and the other three options are fairly non-significant in this aspect. From travel time standpoint, we did a series of modeling using all the modeling tools we have and look at the overall travel time savings. But before we do that, we look at, well, how much each of these options add in excess capacity to the 405. And this is, as you can tell, that the horizontal bars are showing really the ramp capacity added. And the northeast 2nd Street doesn't add any capacity. You know, the vertical red line is still existing. And it counts all the existing ramps between Southeast 8th and to Northeast 8th. So the Northeast 2nd is really the existing capacity that are the ramps that we have between the two interchanges. And then the, you know, the two, the Lake Hill Connector Southbound on-ramp and Southeast 6th Street Southbound on-ramp, they are very similar. So provide a similar capacity. With the inside connection at the Southeast 6th Street provides a little bit more because it has both direction on and off ramps. So this one is a fairly straightforward. And then the next measurement that we looked at is the citywide travel time. And showing these are the hours saved per day, as the model indicate. The longer the bar, the higher the travel time savings. And you can see the Lake Hill Connector and Southeast 6th Street software on-ramp provide fairly close travel time savings. And with the significant higher travel time savings for the express turn lane connection. And that again is because of there's two-way connection instead of one way. And then the Northeast 2nd Street, because it doesn't add freeway capacity or add freeway access, it barely produces any transportation travel time saving benefits, essentially. So, and then we looked at how these alternatives may impact local intersections. So the intersections we looked at are the orange and red dots on the right-hand map. The three red dots are the new intersections created if this option is constructed. So basically showing at the intersection level, actually, the Southeast 6th Street southbound on-ramp showing relatively a little higher travel time savings at the intersections, close to 10%. And the other two connections, one at the Lake Hill connector and the other is the inside connection, and with the comparable and between 6 to 7% savings. The Northeast 2nd Street, on the other hand, it's expected to even add delay to intersections. And the primary reason for that is it would make the, because it has to be elevated over 405. So the people now, they could travel from Northeast 2nd Street to 114th and back. They couldn't do that anymore because of the elevation of the roadway. So it actually adds time to the local circulation, therefore adds time to intersections that analyzed. So that's on the intersection performance side, and then on the access and safety, we look at the multimodal really is to say which option provides not only the vehicle access but also non-motorized, and how they enhance connection to adjacent properties. This one really shows up not very significant in terms of access, but it's on the property side that reveals a little bit more differences among these options. Starting off from Lake Hills connector. This one would be all using existing right-of-way without needing barely any purchase of new right-of-way. So this one has the least impact to property. And then the Southeast 6th trade, because it will need to elevate to cross 405, then the existing access from adjacent property to current Southeast 6th Street is hindered. So that will have to do some mitigation provided by providing additional access from the property adjacent to it so they can get around. And this diagram shows, you know, one option could be to provide and preserve the existing right-of-way under the overpass, and they have access. But this will have created a little bit of detour. As of today, they can go straight east or west. But if this option is constructed, then they have to go east first to get onto 114th, and then go on Southeast 8th to get around. So a little bit more inconvenience, and also I would need a little bit right of way from these properties. So that's some concerns from these property owners. And then the Northeast 2nd Street, it's really, we got a very tight space between existing property and planned development. And on the east side of freeway, there's a wetland that we have to cross and mitigate. So and then on the west side of the freeway, you can see it cuts through some, you know, existing buildings. So it shows up that the significant property impact, it doesn't generate much travel time savings with the environmental impact. So this option has all kinds of concerns raised. So with that, and it becomes fairly obvious, it's, you know, other than the cost, it becomes obvious which option that be more desirable. So one last thing we look at quantitatively is the cost. With the Northeast 2nd Street extension cost the least. And this has a big caveat in the sense that if we buy the right way today, as you know, these properties are under, you know, the developers or property owners are in the process of thinking about redeveloping. So as the days go by, the cost of right way will increase dramatically. So this is a very bare bone cost estimate. And then on the Lake Hill connector side on the top, this is probably the least cost option. And then with the Southeast 6th Street extensions of on-ramp costing about $25 million more. The inside connection is costing, it's estimated to cost the most, more than double of the Lake Hill connector, because this option not only needs to build cross over, it also needs to push 405 outward in order to make room inside to make a ramp connection. So it will involve major freeway reconstruction in order to build these ramps. So it turns out to be the most costly option. So we brought these information to stakeholders and public for their input. And the stakeholders are the property owners within the study area, primarily. And also representatives from neighborhood associations immediately in the study area or adjacent to the study area. So the feedback we got is there's a broad support of the building of selecting any of these build alternatives, particularly the three at the south end with the freeway access. And they really have a lot of concerns about the connection at the Northeast 2nd Street for the reasons that mentioned earlier. And they really believe that the no build is really not an acceptable option. We need to do something to accommodate the growth. So on the public side, that what we heard is more diverse. And they are much more multi-model oriented. There's a significant portion of the participants and keep concerns on the climate change, any build of the free roadway access, what they might have impact on vehicle travel and the climate change. So in summary, they are in general support to do something, but they also raise concern that we need to address any of the impacts that may come with these options. And some even suggested to look at the main street, which we have ruled out at the early on in the study process. But so, and then we also shared information with key interest groups, particularly the BDA and Chamber and ETA. And each of their board actually have met, and you know, after inviters presenting the information, they met and made their own recommendation to the council. So in summary, they all like the build option, you know, to build something. Overall, they see Napier Connector as the one that gives relatively more benefits and relatively less impact. And so it's one thing that interesting to note is that ETA even recommend that while we move forward with this option, let's not forget potential future connection at the Northeast 2nd Street in the future. So, and with that, the highlight is really it wasn't too difficult, although the study process is quite complicated, but at the end, it becomes obvious that the Napier Connector stands out from all the factors that are considered. And it sort of made the council's decision a little bit easier. I don't know if that's truly easy, but at least they come to a unanimous decision or selection and identify that the Napier Connector as the option that we're going to forward to WASHDOT for their consideration. And one important aspect is that they also emphasize the need to make this a truly multimodal solution, because the Napier Connector on-ramp it's not realistic to build bike lanes or sidewalks along the freeway ramp. They directed the department to expedite the implementation of the multimodal paths. And on Southeast 6th Street, the green line that show on the screen, to connect the 112 and the Napier Connector. So that's the council direction. So what the next steps need to be done is that we reflect this direction into the transportation improvement program, which Kevin indicated is going to happen in quarter one or quarter two of this year. And because this is ultimately a WASHDOT project, WASHDOT is the one that will be implementing this. Before implementing, obviously, it needs the money to do design, environmental documentation, and also needs the US DOT approval. So that's kind of rundown of the study and the outcome. And at this point, I open if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Ming. Does anybody have any questions? You can raise your hand. All right, looks like there are no questions. Thank you so much, Ming, for the presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We are going to move on to item 8 of the agenda, approval of minutes. I believe we have our December 9th minutes we're approving. Does anybody have any substantial corrections to the minutes that they'd like to address? So hearing none, the minutes are approved. We do not, I don't believe we have any unfinished business or new business, and we're back to oral and written communications. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak at this time? Please feel free to raise your hand and we'll unmute you. Looks like no one is today. So on to item 12. Kevin, the commission calendar.
Okay, thank you. The next time we'll be together is February 10th. And I appreciate that Suming came to introduce the I-405 southbound access report tonight, because that'll be one of the projects that staff will recommend the commission adds to the Transportation Improvement Program. That annual Transportation Improvement Program update will begin in February, on February 10th. So you have a preview of what's to come. The TIP, for those of you who haven't participated in it before, is an annual update to make sure that we have a comprehensive list of all the potential transportation projects that have been developed through long-range planning, such as the project that Suming just talked about. And it also is an opportunity to remove projects that have been already constructed, or to amend the project description after additional engineering work has been done on preliminary project design. So my colleague Christy Osterveen always manages that Transportation Improvement Program update, and she will do so again, and we'll see her on the 2nd or the 10th of February. The other item, you'll see me and Chris again on the Mobility Implementation Plan. We will bring to you a draft document for your consideration. We'll look for your comments, suggested amendments, and look for a transmittal to the council, hopefully in the March meeting.
Excellent. We can tell Christy we're looking forward to having her back. So item 13, does anybody have any objections to adjourning the meeting? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Good night.